Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, next up, a good friend of mine, Larry Elder, who's just an incredible talk show host. But when it comes to statistics and cops and shootings and black and brown and the educational system and everything else, nobody knows more than Larry Elder. I'll challenge him with a few questions. I think you'll be surprised at a few answers. But most importantly, I think you should share this conversation with somebody you know, because it is enlightening, and we need some real information to come out these days instead of just all the scary people on the news telling you what a horrible society we're living in. So please take a few minutes, listen to this episode of Larry Elder, and then share it with somebody. All right, Tommy John, secret to staying sweat-free this summer is Tommy John. Are you ready? Super breathable. This stuff is the best. I'm wearing my Tommy John's right now. Cool cotton underwear for men and for women. Like having your own on-body AC unit made from premium natural Pima cotton for enhanced airflow. It evaporates sweat super fast. Huh, it's 121 degrees in the valley 2 days ago. Lounge pants, lazy day joggers, soft Zoom-ready tees and polos. Upgrade to Tommy John. Do it today for enhanced super breathable designs. Stuff is just the best. Once you get into your Tommy John's, you're not going back to what you're currently wearing. Best pair you'll ever wear. Or it's free. Guarantee. Tommy John, no adjustment needed. Right, Dawson?
For a limited time, go to TommyJohn.com/Adam to get 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/Adam. The Adam Carolla Show presents Larry Elder's Birthday Cocktail Party. For April 27th, let's see who's at the party. Coming in at number one on the countdown, Casey Kasem. Catch him if you can, con man Frank Abagnale Jr. Lizzo in the Hizzo. Senator Cory Booker. Coretta Scott King. Jason Whitlock, and the 18th President of the United States of America and General of the Union Army, Ulysses S. Grant. Let's get back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Larry Elder, quite a stacked lineup for your birthday. A lot of diversity.
Tell me about that. I can't believe we were able to get Ulysses. I thought he was booked.
Uncle Tom is a documentary. I watched it last night. It is fantastic. It's such an important... It's such an important message. And as I said, I've heard you talk about it on your program. And when you were saying, it's, you know, 9.94.94 on IMDb. And I think the casual listener doesn't know what that means.
Right.
If you, the person, meaning me, who's made 8 films and none of them have cracked an 8 on IMDb, to get to 9.4 on IMDb with almost 3,000 votes is insane. It is that good. It's that important. And it's the kind of thing, it sounds trite, but if everyone in America would watch this film, it would really change the direction we're moving in.
I think so. I know that's a bold thing to say about a movie, for crying out loud, but if you look on the reviews on IMDb, and by the way, the reason that I never kind of gave people perspective on it is because I sort of thought that a 9.4 without saying anything would be eyebrow raising, but you're right. I got a lot of letters from people that said, what's 9.4 mean? When you look at the average Michael Moore documentary, and I kind of liken ours to that only because Michael Moore's Bowling for Columbine opening weekend, our opening weekend doubled the opening weekend box office of Bowling for Columbine. And this, Adam, is an online release. And as you know, you can pile 20 people without social distancing to watch a movie. And they can watch it over and over and over again. So if this were a theatrical release and people had to pay to go and see it, the numbers would be off the chart. But they already are off the chart. And what I like so much about the movie is when I look at the IMDb reviews, and occasionally you'll see one that's written by a self-confessed liberal. And he or she would say something like, well, I watched it only because one of my coworkers dared me to see it. I knew it was going to be a piece of crap. I was shocked. I thought the movie was going to be a whole bunch of black conservatives telling people what to think. And in fact, what you are is a bunch of black conservatives telling America, and black America in particular, that they are free to think for themselves. And that's what the movie is really all about. These are conservatives who have been demeaned, called Uncle Tom, called sellout, called bootlicking. And it isn't that the people in the film, whether it's Candace Owens or the late Herman Cain or Adam West or Pastor Stephen Brody, it isn't that the people in the movie are angry about being called this. It's that we feel bad that a healthy debate does not take place, because if Walter Williams had been listened to and Tom Sowell 40 years ago, how much further down the line would we have been in the school choice movement to give inner city parents an option out of a bad public school, something that the polls show black and brown parents want, but white Democrats do not? How much further along could we have been if we had listened to Thomas Sowell talk about the damage done by laws like minimum wage, the damage done by the welfare state that induces women to marry the government and allows men to abandon their financial and moral responsibility? If they hadn't been ignored, how much further down the road would we have been towards making a better country?
Well, you know, for me, the longer I'm on this planet, the more I just sort of look at things, you know, and I try to be kind of philosophical about it. And I think the problem is we charge everything with emotion and race and hate-filled this and that and vitriolic whatever. I always say diet and exercise. If you want to lose weight, it's diet and exercise. And that's it. There's no other avenue. Now, people can talk about a fad diet or a book or my personal trainer. You don't have access to a nutritional whatever. But we all know you can go to prison and get jacked, right? And you don't need a personal trainer. You don't need membership to an exclusive club. It's just diet and exercise. It just works. If you don't want to be fat, diet and exercise. And I feel the same way about race. It's always like, well, what about systemic this? I go, families and education, families and education. I go, yeah, but what about some of these kids who grow up? I go, family, education. I go, yeah, but what about racist cops? I go, I'll grant you all of it. Now let's try family and education. And it's just the argument. And what I know, just as much as I know diet and exercise, nothing will ever come out of the other end of your argument. There is no fixing this with your non-diet and exercise plan. There's no weight loss. It's not going to happen. You can talk about breaking off into discussion groups. You can talk about having a seat at the table. You can talk about having a real conversation, an honest conversation about race. We can have all the NBA coaches in the world sit down and give press conferences. Then we can have this person, that person. We can have summits. We can do everything. If we're not going to participate in this part, this diet and exercise part, this family and education, if we're not going to do it, then all the discussion in the world will lead to nothing, as it has for well over 50 years. It's not moving. It's not moving because they're just discussing the process. No one is actually out participating. Not no one, but not enough people are doing it.
It's also not moving because the premise is bogus. And the premise is that there is something known as systemic racism. In this case, systemic racism on the part of the police. That is, that there is some sort of top-down effort to get black people just because they're black. The data are not there. If anything, the data suggests the opposite. If anything, the police are more hesitant, more reluctant to pull the trigger on a black suspect than on a white suspect.
Well, how could that not be? I mean, for the love of Christ, if you're a 26-year-old cop, white, and you're planning on shooting a black person, you got to know your life is over.
Or a 26-year-old vet. Forget about your pension. Forget about your retirement.
Well, of course you'd have to think about that. Yeah. You would just look, if you hated black people, just from just to preserve your own self, you would have to hesitate.
But Adam, the people are in the streets because they don't believe what you just now said. That's why they're there. When you look at Doc Rivers, the coach of the L.A. Clippers, give this tearful press conference after a game, and he talks about Jacob Blake, and he goes, why do these things keep happening? As if they, quote, keep happening. This is a guy, I saw Doc Rivers speak at a country club not long ago. This is a guy who lives and dies on stats, facts, data, applied logically in order for him to succeed in his career. But when it comes to this issue, don't they want to know how many interactions between the civilians and the police take place every year? Answer, 50 million. Do you want to know how many arrests result from those interactions every year? Answer, 11 million. How many cops are assaulted because of all this? 60,000. How many people are killed after all this happens by the cops? 1,000. 500 whites, 250 blacks. At least as many unarmed whites are killed every year as are unarmed blacks. Nobody seems to give a rip. And the premise seems to be that black people are being shot and killed just because they're black. It's not true. And it's one thing to have a stupid view that's just wrong. Lots of people have wrong-headed, stupid views. This one gets people killed. Cops pull back. The same 25-year-old vet I talked about will pull back rather than run the risk of sticking his nose in some situation where he's going to be accused of being racist. Bad guys know that. The people who get hurt are the very black people that Black Lives Matter and these other activists claim that they care about. So it's not just wrong-headed. It's hurting people. It is getting people killed. And it's based upon a completely bogus assumption that really is an insult to America. This is a country that just elected Barack Obama. He got a higher percentage of the white vote than John Kerry did 4 years earlier, got reelected with an even bigger margin. And Adam, when he got elected in 2008, he walks into office 2009, he's sitting at 67%. How did that happen? A whole bunch of people who didn't even vote for him still pulled for him. And now he gets into office. What does he do? The Cambridge police acted stupidly. If I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon. Racism is in America's DNA. Hired Eric Holder. Sharpton visit the White House 80-some-odd times. He spends 8 years telling white America how racist they are, the same white America that put his black butt into the White House. It's stunning to me, Adam. Stunning.
You should do a radio talk show. You got chops. Well, okay, a couple things. Not only the Ferguson effect where the cops pulling out is going to get more poor black and brown people killed, right, which is, again, we claim we don't want this to happen, but yet if you're pulling back the police, then those are the people that suffer. The people in my neighborhood and your neighborhood don't suffer, but those people do.
Or Doc Rivers' neighborhood.
He's sitting in Malibu
saying all this kind of nonsense, being completely immune from the consequences of what he's saying.
But I also suggest it's even more insidious because it's sort of a two-way street. As the cops pull back, not wanting to get their careers destroyed by whatever interaction may go wrong, even if it's technically a clean execution. I mean execution, but a clean, even if they're doing their job properly, you film it, you put the snippet up, it's out of context. Mm-hmm. You and your family reputation are destroyed. The cops are pulling back, but you're also telling young black men that they have a target on their back, that the society hates them, that cops are racist. So now, what are the chances they're going to resist arrest, fight with the cops, and argue with the cops? Look, if you spoon-fed me a narrative that the cops are out to kill me, and the next thing you know, I was getting out of my car and the cop was coming up behind
me, I'm on guard.
I would definitely think about getting away from him.
Right.
So it's both. It's the cops pulling back and the people you're convincing are going to be executed by the cops that they have to duke it out with the cops.
And again, this whole premise is based upon the notion that America is intrinsically racist. You want to play that game? Kamala Harris spoke at the DNC and she said let's be clear. There's no vaccine for racism. We have to do the work. Let's ignore the work part for a second. There's no vaccine for racism. It's a good thing there's no vaccine for racism, because if there were, and all the white people were vaccinated, so all their anti-black hostility is gone, and the water was washed away, and we saw the rocks exposed, the major rocks that affect the black community would still be there. A, 70% of black kids are raised outside of wedlock. B, there's a 50% high school dropout rate among many inner city high schools. And C, 25% of young black men have criminal records, either have been arrested in jail, on parole, or on probation. Those things would still remain if there were a vaccine against racism. Furthermore, the beneficiaries of that vaccine against racism might largely be non-blacks. There's been a poll, Rasmussen has done it for several years, where blacks, whites, Hispanics, and Asians were all asked, of these four groups, which group is the most racist? Whites said blacks were the most racist. Hispanics said blacks were the most racist. Asians said blacks were the most racist. Blacks said blacks were the most racist. The Anti-Defamation League for decades has tracked anti-Semitism in America. And generally speaking, blacks are 2.5 to 3 times more likely to be anti-Semitic than non-black Gentiles. So if you want to play this game about getting rid of all the racism in America, otherwise America remains this hostile environment, then black people should look in the mirror, too, because there are a whole lot of black people who are racist. And the percentage of black people who oppose interracial marriage, black-white marriage, is identical to the percentage of white people who oppose it, which is roughly about 18%.
Well, also, if you just think about it from a sort of nuts and bolts pragmatic standpoint, don't you think?
Don't you love how Adam always does that? I'm talking. Adam wipes away all the BS and says, okay, Larry, here's what you just now said. And I said, you know what? I probably could have done that in 7 seconds.
No, I'm not. I'm going to let what you say stand on its own. But I'm saying I'm a pragmatist. And my feeling is like, what's in it for white America to be racist in 2020? Don't we hope? Don't you think every white person hopes that every black child grows up with an intact family and gets a great education and pays taxes and becomes a productive member of society just for my own selfish reasons, right?
It's a perfectly legitimate question to ask. It's the same question I ask in a somewhat different way. What's in it for Larry Elder to say all this stuff about America not being as racist as you think it is? What am I getting out of it? And why am I an Uncle Tom for that? Why am I a sellout? Why am I a coon? Why am I self-loather? Wouldn't you pull for me? Wouldn't you like to know that when the cop pulls you over disproportionately, and it is true that black motorists are pulled over disproportionately compared to white motorists, that's because they violate the law disproportionately compared to white motorists. Isn't that good news that the reason you got pulled over is not because you're black? Instead of you're saying, well, Larry Elder is wrong, here's his data. No, Larry Elder is an Uncle Tom. Larry Elder is a sellout. Larry Elder wants to undermine his own people. That I have difficulty understanding.
Well, it's sort of like... Also, and I'll play a Michelle Obama clip, but I was talking to Dr. Drew about this earlier because I was anticipating speaking to you. I have said since I was doing Loveline in the late 90s that I think much of what is perceived as racism is really just rude neighbors, rude cops, rude people on the road, people... I don't think anyone has any idea, the average black person, how often the average white person has a neighbor that's horrible to them for what seems like no reason, which I've always had. I've had bad neighbors calling cops, you know, blah, 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 all the stuff you could imagine. I think there's much more of that. And I was listening to Michelle Obama's podcast. You have that clip. And she was playing. It's sort of I'll back up and then I'll go ahead again. It's like when Trump says Nelson Mandela, he's a shitty leader, lives in a shithole nation. He doesn't run the thing right. Then they go, he's racist. But if he does it about any other white leader, then it's not. But my point is he would say that. You can argue whether it's right or wrong. But what I'm saying is I think he would say that about Serbia or some place that had a white leader. That guy's an idiot. The place a piece of shit. He doesn't run by. But of course, now we know it's not racist because he's speaking about a white person. And maybe I made a good example in the right country or not. But what I'm saying is not everything is racism. Sometimes it's just people being rude. And I'll play you the Michelle Obama clip because I want to get your take on it, because in her podcast, she's sort of explaining what it's like to be a black woman and in racism. And I'm like, the example she uses is something that every human being has had happen to personally at least 10 dozen times. Here we go.
We had just finished taking the girls to a soccer game. We were stopping to get ice cream. And I had told the Secret Service to stand back because we were trying to be normal, trying to go in. It was Haagen-Dazs, wasn't it?
Exactly, Haagen-Dazs.
And there was a line. And once again, when I'm just a black woman, I notice that white people don't even see me. They're not even looking at me. So I'm standing there with two little black girls, another black female adult. They're in soccer uniforms. And a white woman cuts right in front of us to order, like she didn't even see us. And the girl behind the counter almost took her order. And I had to stand up because I know Danielle was like, well, I'm not going to cause.
Has anyone ever been a victim of having someone cut in front of them waiting at a fucking ice cream store? Poor. Are you insane? This is your example for racism because they didn't even see you?
It's like Oprah's example. Remember Oprah? She was in some store and it was a $38,000 purse and the store owner didn't think she could afford it and therefore didn't go get it for her. Oh, my goodness.
Right.
Oh, the humanity. What is Obama in? A $12.7 million house in Martha's Vineyard? Look, Michelle Obama wrote her senior thesis at Princeton about white privilege, about her feeling abused at Princeton, which is one of the most liberal campuses in America. This is how she's been her whole life.
Right, but how?
Race card.
What shot do we have of curing this if your husband got elected to two terms
Harvard as a president? Husband.
And you were the toast and the darling of every cocktail party.
Most popular women in America by polls, Michelle Obama is. And
right.
Here she is bitching and moaning and whining about oppression because some white woman cut in front of her at Haagen-Dazs. My goodness.
But who has not had a human cut in front of them waiting in line anywhere
exactly.
at some point in your existence? And here it's hubris because the notion that you would even trot this out as an example is absolutely insane.
Well, she also contradicts herself. She says most white people don't even notice I'm there. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? And then the woman cut in front of her and did it because of racism. I thought you just said she didn't notice you were there. Look, the point you're making is this. George, nobody I know of in law enforcement community is happy with the way this cop dealt with George Floyd.
Right.
Whether he should be called a murderer, whether he should be put to death, there are people that can debate it. But nobody is quarreling that this procedure was inappropriate. Why are we assuming that whatever happened to George Floyd happened because he was black? Same guy resisting arrest, same guy mouthing off, same guy doing everything George Floyd did, except let's make him white. Are we assuming that the officer would have behaved differently? Why are we assuming this? Why are we making this assumption?
Well, first off, the news has blood on its hands, as far as I'm concerned, because I sit in this studio where and Mark Garagos sits where you're sitting. And we talk about cases he has, cases about, by the way, the deceased are the people been shot, executed by the police, and he's representing their families. These mm-hmm. are white men.
Right.
Now, these are some of the worst shootings you've ever seen in your adult life, and much, much worse. The stuff you think is pretty graphic and pretty bad that you think you've seen. This stuff is much worse. I mean, the guy in Yuma is crawling along the hotel hallway, begging for his life and sobbing. He is literally executed by the police.
Right.
There's another case he has where it's a young man. Chris can find it. It's out of Utah. And a cop just rolls up. They got the cop body cam going. Cop just rolls up on a call that some guys out front of a super, I think it's filling station, a gas station or a mini mart or something like that. Kid's like walking away from him, maybe 19, 20 year old guy. Dylan Taylor. Cop just kind of pulls up behind him and goes, hey, turn around. And the guy just turns around. He just shoots him and kills him. Mm-hmm. Just guns him down.
White guy?
Yeah. No, mm-hmm. no. Oh, if it was a black guy, mm-hmm. we'd know. Yeah. We'd know it. No wrestling.
Dylan Noble in Fresno a few years ago, a 19 years old white guy, pulls up to a filling station, as you call it. My dad called him a filling station, yeah. too. I haven't heard that in years.
Empty the ash cans. Give me a pop.
And they say, show me your hands. The guy doesn't show his hands. He kind of reaches furtively towards his waist. They blow him away. One day story, I think Wolf Blitzer gave a minute or so on that. Outside of that, we don't know
well,
his name.
Well, my point is this. So you can go, well, so then what's the problem? Like, a lot of people are shot. We don't have time to cover them all. Yes, but if you simply cover the black shootings and you never cover any of the white shootings, then there's no context. Your audience thinks cops, well, by the way, congratulations. You've done a wonderful job
right.
making the nation think the cops solely prey on young black men. Now, you could argue that makes the cops even worse when they shoot everybody, but that's still my racism argument. So I'm saying they equally shoot guys, and some of it is actually more egregious, like the guy in Utah or the other guy. I mean, he just turned around.
Remember Kelly Lynch here in Fullerton? The guy was literally beaten with a flashlight.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, when this happens, do they stick a mic in front of Larry Bird's face and ask him about about police brutality against white guys? Why is it that we stick a mic in front of LeBron James and Jalen Rose's face when something goes down and expect these guys to comment profoundly on a social issue like this? They know nothing at all about the facts. As I said before, the facts don't support their argument. If anything, the police are more hesitant, more reluctant to shoot a black guy than a white guy. And here they are going,
Well, I think you take the nation and you kind of divide them up. You have the group that believes it and is championing the cause and may even profit from the cause. And then you have the majority of people who are just plain scared. I mean, they don't agree with all that they hear on the news or that LeBron or Doc Rivers says, but they'll be goddamned if they're going to open their mouth because they're scared.
Or they just are ignorant. They just don't have the information.
They don't want the information.
Candace Owens just had a very long interview with Mark Lamont Hill. Mark Lamont Hill is a professor of African-American studies at Temple. He's often appears on CNN and MSNBC Hee-Haw. It's a pundit in your face, race card. She got him to concede that the studies do not show that the police are killing black people just because they're black. And during the interview, she stopped him. She said, now, you just made a major concession, because she said that in her question. He says, you're right. The data don't show that necessarily. But she's OK. You just now said, and you are agreeing the people are in the streets now because they believe that the police are killing black people just because they're black. So you're telling me that the reason people are in the streets right now is based upon a false premise. You're saying that, aren't you? And he had to very reluctantly concede that he was saying that. So these people are down there. You put a mic in front of their faces, hook them up to a polygraph, and ask most of these people in the streets, do you believe the police are killing black people just because they're black, hurting black people just because they're black? I think most of them, when they say yes, will be proven to be truthful, but by the polygraph. They're just wrong about the facts, but they feel it because CNN, MSNBC, as you pointed out, feeds this stuff. Ever since they were kids, they've been fed this stuff.
We have the, you can go back a little with the Michelle Obama thing, because I kind of cut it off, but there was the, sort of the end of it, which I kind of whacked off, a couple seconds left. But and there's so much, and the reason I'm picking on Michelle Obama is because I feel like if the Obamas wanted to, they could make a huge difference in this department because people listen to them so carefully.
So influential.
And yet they keep going down this road where it's like, well, we got a place called Ferguson where a young man was shot for – it's like stop going down that road.
You know it's a lie. I did a video where I compared the kind of stuff that Barack Obama says at Howard on commencement versus the kind of stuff he says to the nation about its racism. It's night and day. Obama knows damn well it's not true. This is a guy, when he decided to run for office, there was a big article about it in Time magazine. He brought all his homies in there, Valerie Jarrett and David Plouffe and Axelrod, all to decide if I should run. And the article said race never came up.
Right.
Because he doesn't think of himself that way. This guy was president of the Harvard Law Review, for crying out loud. He doesn't think of himself that way. He thinks of himself as Barack Hussein Obama, comma, badass. Because he is. The first black man to become elected president, knocked off Hillary like that, knocked off Mitt Romney to get reelected. He is a badass. That's how he thinks of himself. He could not have run if he didn't have an ego like that. So the idea that he thinks black people are held back by racism is BS. But he knows that the politician in him needs to have that 95% black vote. Otherwise, the Democratic Party is toast at the presidential level. And that is why they're so scared of Donald Trump. And that is why they have to say over and over and over again that Donald Trump is a racist, because God forbid that 15-20% of black people should pull the lever for this guy. They're done.
Do you have the rest of Michelle? Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I do not.
So I stepped up and I said, excuse me, as you don't see us four people standing right here, you just jumped in line. She didn't apologize. She never looked me in my eye. She didn't know it was me. All she saw was a black person or a group of black people, or maybe she didn't even see that because we were that invisible. I can tell you a number of stories like that when I've been completely incognito during the 8 years in the White House, walking the dogs on the canal. People will come up and pet my dogs, but will not look me in the eye. They don't know it's me.
Crying out loud.
And it's you know, what white folks don't understand, it's like
white folk.
That is so telling of how white America views people who are not like them.
Not like them.
I hate.
You don't exist. I hate that.
Isn't it amazing how
not
black
like
people.
Them. It's so goddamn
amazing,
insulting.
Amazing how black people always know what white people are thinking.
They do.
Isn't that insulting?
What am I thinking right now, Larry? Yeah.
She wasn't even she didn't even notice me. How do you know that?
Well,
you're Michelle Obama. You're one of the most recognized women in the world. How do you know she didn't know you? Maybe she didn't care. Maybe she thought you wouldn't care. How do you know?
She's been on more covers of more magazines than any first lady ever. This is insane that these words are coming out of this person's mouth. And that's when I realize either it's so in them that that's the way they see life no matter what, because her life experiences don't mirror this,
right,
or she's just lying in order to sort of keep stay the party line? I don't know.
I think she's always had this kind of viewing the world that I call it viewing the world through race tinted glasses. She's always been like that. That's why she did the senior thesis in Princeton based upon the same thing. Obama never thought himself that way. Obama's right. itch was that he didn't have a father in his life. That's why he wrote his book.
There's a question here that I'll bring up to Larry on line three. Mike, 42, San Diego.
Yay.
Mm. What's going on?
How are you, fellas?
Hey, Mike.
Pretty much. Well, you know, first, thank you for providing amazing discourse on all of this. I think both your platforms with Uncle Tom movie and Adam, your show is a refuge for folks that are looking for good discussion. So that brings me to my question. I don't mean to be naive, but I'll ask the million-dollar question. Why isn't there a national conversation with public intellectuals like the Monk debates in Canada? Why don't we have that here with Thomas Sowell, Bob Woodson, yourself, Larry, folks from the BLM side or the left? Why don't we have that?
It's an excellent idea. That idea has been proposed to me recently, and I think that would be a wonderful idea. Who's going to cover it? Is CNN going to cover it? Is MSNBC going to cover it? Can we get the New York Times to cover it? Maybe put it online, live stream it? I don't know. It's a wonderful idea.
I've heard you debate a few people. Dave Rubin, obviously, is one of the ones that sort of comes to mind. Do you think anyone from Black Lives Matter or LeBron James or Doc Rivers, do you think any of these people want to debate you or Candace Owens or Thomas Sowell or any of the folks who are sort of loaded with stats information when they've been sort of peddling this bullshit for the last number of years? Do you really think anyone on that side would agree to debate you in a sort of fair and open
forum? I think so. I think Mark Lamont Hill probably would. He agreed to go on Candace Owens' show, and for 1 hour, they had a very candid conversation. There are some people out there who would. But I've been in radio now almost 25 years, and I probably have invited Jesse Jackson on my radio show until I stopped doing it maybe 100 times. Sharpton maybe 50 times, Maxine Waters maybe 50 times, Farrakhan maybe 25 times. And in many cases, they wouldn't even return the phone call. And the reason I invited them is because these people, as you pointed out about Obama and Michelle, have a great deal of influence. All three of them, Farrakhan, Obama, and Farrakhan, Sharpton, and Jesse Jackson, all three of them have something in common. And that is they had either a non-existent or a bad relationship with their own fathers. Jesse Jackson's mother was a teenage mother who got pregnant by the married man who lived next door. Jesse Jackson grew up in South Carolina when it was rare not to have a dad in the home. And he was taunted, Jesse ain't got no daddy, Jesse ain't got no daddy. Farrakhan's mother was estranged from her husband, had a boyfriend, went back with the husband briefly, got pregnant by the husband, didn't want the boyfriend to know, tried to abort Farrakhan with a coat hanger. Sharpton had a nice middle-class life until his father abandoned the family, then down to the hood. So all three of these men could speak fervently, sincerely, and persuasively about what happens to you when you don't have a father in the home. Instead, they're mired in this image of America that they have frozen in time from the 50s. I said to a guy the other day, World War II, there were a bunch of Japanese fighters who were fighting in Burma, in the islands, in the jungles, unaware the war was over. Even though the Japanese littered the place with leaflets to let these soldiers know the war was over. But they thought the leaflets were propaganda dropped by the enemy. So they were fighting for years in the jungle when the war was over. Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, Farrakhan, they are in Burma.
All right. The war's over. The
war's over.
All right, let me hit BetterHelp, and then we'll continue on with the great Larry Elder. BetterHelp, online, licensed professional counselors who specialize in depression, anxiety, relationships, sleep, anger, self-esteem, and more. Connect with your counselor in a safe, private, online environment. Anything shared is, of course, confidential. Simply fill out a questionnaire, and they'll assess your needs. You get matched up in under 48 hours. Easy to schedule, and you can schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus exchange unlimited messages. So if any reason you're unhappy, their counselor requests a new one anytime, no charge. Join the over 1 million people using BetterHelp. In fact, so many are using BetterHelp, they're actually recruiting additional counselors in 50 states. Well, now more than ever. BetterHelp, right, Dawson?
BetterHelp is a truly affordable option, and our listeners get 10% off your first month with the discount code ADAM. So why not start today? Go to BetterHelp.com/Adam. That's BetterHelp.com/Adam. Talk to a therapist online and get help.
Larry Elder is here. We'll, I'll bring up some of my challenging questions that I teased at the top of the show. You weren't privy or you weren't able to prepare for this, but I will play the role of the spoiler here and see if I can't challenge you on a couple of these statistics and questions. And we'll do that with Larry Elder right after this.
In the spirit of Murrow, Jennings, Cronkite, here's another great moment in local news.
Well, the online marketplace Etsy also reported that helping more than 100,000 vendors sell almost $350 million worth of masks was a good deed.
You know, I've spent over $100 on masks easily.
Oh, easily, yeah.
You know, it's a fashion statement. I was at a restaurant outdoors the other day, and ladies were like, nice mask. Oh, you too. It was like a compliment.
It's like the new M thing.
It
now.
Is.
You know, you saw it together with the MTV Video Music Awards.
Right.
You know, they had them very designed.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, I want some of Lady Gaga's masks.
I know, right?
Awesome.
That's a great moment in local news. Now, back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Larry Elder is our guest, of course. Uncle Thomas's documentary, and need I say more than 9.4 on IMDb, which, again, you guys all think of your favorite movie. And then go check the IMDb score. You will not see anything that starts
and
with a 9.
It would be even higher if you throw out the guys or gals that gave it a 1-star.
Oh.
That just went on because they hate my guts. Larry Elder did a movie, and it sucks. Here's a 1-star. So you throw out those, it's a 9.7.
You know, it's always funny about a Larry Elder. It's like, you're just saying this stuff so you can get paid from your shills over at Fox News or whatever. And it's like, okay, you don't get paid from them, number one. Number two, walking around being called an Uncle Tom and a coon your entire adult life. Do you think that's something that anyone would sign up for? If the notion that you have to go through what you go through on a daily basis and the assumption from the detractors that you're only doing this for your own personal gain is obviously insane.
And also, we have to assume, of course, that the detractors are coming from a place of sincerity. They're coming from a place of good faith, but Larry Elder is not.
Right. Yeah, at least they should be agnostic on Larry Elder, going, well, I guess he's trying to help the black community, misguided as he is. They should at least cut you a break on trying to help.
And speaking of which, my favorite story about Larry Elder, misguided, I'm walking down the street. There's a club, a place on Fairfax called Tom's or Tim's Tavern. Mm-hmm. It's still there. So I'm walking down there. A couple of brothers are on a brick wall smoking cigarettes. And they weren't the best dressed. So I wasn't quite sure. Look a little dicey. One of them says, "You're Larry Elder. Come over here." Now, I figured, Adam, if they were going to shoot me, they would have done it by now. So I went over. And he goes, "Let me tell you something about you, Larry. I hate you and I love you. You're like castor oil. It don't taste good going down, but it's good for you. Keep it up."
Wow.
I knew I had turned a corner at that point in my career.
Well, just to backtrack a little bit, I know Larry's story well. And, but maybe my audience doesn't. You grow up out here. You're in South Central. Your dad's a small business owner, owns a restaurant. I think a cafe.
Yeah. He was a janitor first. He cleaned toilets till I was around 10 or 12 years old. Then he starts a little cafe.
And you go to the same school Ice Cube went to
before
he transferred.
Although 10 years earlier than Ice T.
Oh, Ice T.
Yeah,
sorry.
Ice Cube went to Taft.
Right.
By the way, he was bused to Taft because he didn't want to go to the bad nearby urban school. So essentially, he was went to a charter school, if you can look at it that way. He had choice.
Right.
Choice. And he pulls the lever for the Democratic Party that is adamantly opposed to the choice that he took advantage of when he was growing up. I'm just saying.
Well, the school. All right. So we'll go back to Larry's childhood in a second. But to me, the school choice thing, that is a real deal breaker in that when people say, no, we need more programs in the inner city, or, hey, we need to take these cops and we need to not defund them, but take some of those resources and allocate them toward counselors and whatever. And I always think to myself, well, none of that's going to work, but I'm not calling you a liar, and I think maybe your heart's in the right place. You just don't understand criminals and cops right. and the inner city and how things really work. Your notion is, you know, I live in Beverly Hills. Why don't we take some of that money from the inner city cops and put it toward counselors and programs? And it's like, that all sounds great. It's never going to work, but fine. It's right up there with, why don't we give every child LA Unified a tablet so that they can be technologically caught up. And it's like, okay, that sounds good. Never going to work. You get back to me in 6 months. Tell me how that program's worked out. But when it comes to school choice, one group, the Republicans, want vouchers and charters and school choice. This should be a bipartisan issue.
Should be.
It's insane that people that are pro-choice in every other facet of life don't want school choice. And while all the other things I can kind of look at is, well, your heart's in the right place, but I don't think it's going to work out well if you do it, or you want to raise the minimum wage. I understand what you think you're doing. Mm-hmm. It's going to hurt businesses, blah, blah, blah. School choice, I go, you're a liar. You're hurting black people. You're hurting brown people. You're in with the teachers' unions. You're now lying at this point.
And every now and then, you will find what we lawyers call declarations against interest, where people say stuff that they shouldn't say because it doesn't advance their political interest. Joe Lieberman was the running mate. And Joe Lieberman publicly said that we ought to have an experiment for school choice. But when he became the running mate, he then did a 180 on the issue. Joe Biden, decades ago, also talked about being open to having choice in school because of the quality of urban schools. He's now done a 180 on that as well. So when you have a bunch of Democrats who have from time to time, including Bill Clinton, expressed an interest in this. He hired somebody named Patrick Wolf, who's an educator from University of Arkansas, to examine the Arkansas school choice program. And Wolf came back, examined it, and said that he was in favor of it, that school choice, when it's been analyzed across the country, the graduation rates improved. Parental choice, parental satisfaction improves, and reading and test scores improve. What are we talking about here? And it turns out it also improves the public schools because they lose students and then they start doing things to make sure they don't lose any more. So it turns out the competition is beneficial. We have choice after public high school. We have choice in preschool. But there's some form of no-fly zone over K through 12. And again, what bothers me is you look at the polls. Black and brown urban parents want choice. White suburban parents who are Democrats do not want choice. They don't live in the city. They wouldn't send their kid to an urban school. And here you are denying the right of an urban parent to send their kid to a better school. It's insulting to me. And that alone should break the relationship between the Democratic Party and the and black voters. That alone should.
Well, especially since the most important thing we could do, besides having a father in the house, and it's difficult to legislate that, but the most important thing you could do to interrupt this school-to-prison pipeline, what school are they living?
Exactly.
They're leaving your school to go to the prison? What's going on at that school?
And Adam, you mentioned the Obamas. Obama went to the finest prep school in the state of Hawaii. It's called Punahou. His mother and he were living in Indonesia with his stepfather. He, by the way, was an oil executive. They attended the special school that was set up for the oil executives. Then Obama goes back to Hawaii, goes to Punahou, again, the finest prep school in the state of Hawaii. He then does 2 years here in L.A. at Oxy, which is also a private school, very competitive, finishes at Columbia, then goes to Harvard. Michelle Obama was bused to a high school so she would avoid the bad public local high school. Then she goes to Princeton. Then she goes to Harvard. And then they both meet at Sidley and Austin, the Silk Stocking law firm in Chicago. Neither one of them really ever set foot in a traditional public school, because while Michelle went to one, she went to the best one because she avoided the bad one near her. And they are denying the right of urban parents to do exactly as they've done. It really is quite amazing. And it's amazing to me Republicans haven't made that argument more effectively.
I completely agree. I feel like if you are courting the black vote and the brown vote, I am almost fixated on the school choice thing, because, again, you could argue the merits of many other programs, or look, you're head's in the right place or your heart's not in the right place. But school choice is just school choice. I mean, it's going to benefit anybody who receives school choice. And it's insane that the Republicans aren't making more of a meal out of
that. The people who know you're right know that more than anybody else are public school teachers. The average family, I think America, 10% of American families have their kids in private school. 6% of black families do. But if you look at Philadelphia public school teachers who have school-age kids, 44% of them have them in private school. Chicago, 39%. L.A., 28%. Now, these are the people who know the schools better than anybody else. And when they have their own children, they're not putting them in those schools.
And aren't making a ton of dough. As well. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's see. So I'll challenge you with a couple of these questions, and we'll see if you can answer them.
Lay it on me.
Yeah, some of the stuff's like the police shooting and the statistics and unarmed and all that kind of stuff. We've heard it. It's pretty straightforward. Others seem more difficult to argue away. Why are black kids more likely to get suspended?
Because they're more likely to misbehave. Period. End of statement. Some years ago, Jesse Jackson filed a lawsuit against the all-white school board in Decatur, Illinois, because they kicked out a bunch of black kids who were fighting after a football game. And Jackson sued them, claiming that they were violating the 14th Amendment because they were racist by kicking out these black kids. And the school board defended itself by pointing out that schools all around the country, irrespective of the race of the principal, irrespective of the race of the school board, black boys were kicked out disproportionately compared to white boys because they were misbehaving.
So
goes back to not having a dad in the home. I have a friend who's a elementary school teacher, Adam. She says every season, every semester, I can tell on Monday which kids have fathers in the home, which ones don't. Because when I have them for a week and they come back that Monday, the ones that have had a father in the home are disciplined, ready to learn. The ones who have not are acting out. I can almost always tell.
So what if I said, but are black kids at a – are they disciplined more gravely than a white kid who participated in the same activity?
And the answer is there's no evidence of that whatsoever. And in order for you to advance that argument, you have to advance the argument that teachers who typically are liberal have gone into the profession in order to practice their racism, or at least have gone into a profession so they can practice their racism.
That's the other thing, too, when they're talking about schools. I'm like, you're calling teachers racist, mm-hmm. essentially, the most liberal people on the planet. Prisoners and sentencing in prisoners and blacks getting a longer sentence than their white counterparts who commit the same crime.
And that is also a true stat. The average black criminal gets a prison sentence about 20% longer than the average white criminal. And the reason for this, according to the U.S. Sentencing Commission, which Eric Holder only quoted from sporadically, the reason is because the average black criminal has a longer criminal record than the average white criminal, more convictions. And during the sentencing phase, a judge will properly look at your convictions and will assess a sentence accordingly. They've also seen studies about black judges to find out whether or not there's any difference in their sentencing. No difference.
Last one, employers, potential employers, less likely to hire the folks with the black names versus a traditional white name. So Deshaun versus Dean.
Yeah, and that is true. It's also true that black employers are as likely to not ask a Deshaun to come as a Dean. It's also true that so-called white names like Penelope and Gertrude are also discriminated against, unlikely to be called back. It is such a silly kind of thing. And if all you have to do is make sure your kid does not have a, quote, black-sounding name and everything is fine, then we're in really good shape in America. By the way, I also saw another study that looked at last names, which is what employers basically look at, and they couldn't find any difference. Somebody with a so-called black-sounding name named Johnson versus somebody else named Johnson, they couldn't find any difference. I don't really believe those studies prove much of anything.
You know,
it's so hard to find somebody good. You, Adam, you employ people. I look at these young people that you have working for you. They're all enthusiastic. It's hard to find young, hardworking, enthusiastic people who are going to be loyal. And once you find somebody like that, that's your most valuable asset. So why would I, as an employer, not hire the most qualified person? Even if I were a racist, why would I do that? There's a guy named Ted Stepien. He bought the Cleveland Cavaliers in 1980, and he bought them and said publicly, when I buy this team, I'm going to have more starting white players, because I believe the fans, and at the time that the stadium was in a place called Richfield, which is bum blank away from Cleveland. I don't know why it was built there, but it's around a bunch of white people. And he thought these white people weren't coming to the games because they didn't want to watch black players. So he got a bunch of – he bought the team. Public said he was going to do this. He bought the team. Many of the starters were white. The team lost more games than they did before, drew fewer fans than before. He found out, surprise, surprise, white guys didn't want to watch white guys lose any more than they wanted to watch black guys lose. Fast forward to Donald Sterling. We all know he's a bigot. But look at his payroll. He had one of the highest payrolls of any team owner in the NBA. His coach, Doc Rivers, is white, is black. And by the way, married to a white woman. Much of his roster is black. Even though he's a bigot, he also knew that he couldn't discriminate and be able to put a competitive product on the floor.
Well, sort of the poor version of this is the street cop who doesn't want to be filmed choking out a black man for himself. Mm-hmm. Again, maybe he is racist. Still, that's career suicide.
Right.
And NFL, NBA, they want to win. They want to win. Corporations want to win.
Mm-hmm. They want to make money.
I don't think people really understand that, you know, they're so busy trying to figure out what's in our heart. The reality is it's our wallet that everyone kind of has their hand on. And if this guy can do a better job, or by the way, this girl of any ethnicity or whatever it is, once you find out that person can do that job for you and make you some money, they're immediately in. Even if you have preconceived notions about their race or their heritage or their religion, ethnicity, you'll still push them right to the front because they can help you win. And that really cancels out a lot of what we're talking about. So like there's a premise, we get it in the NBA, let's have the best five players out there. And even the NFL, I mean, there's some defensive sides of the ball that are 11 black men out there, maybe 10 and 1, maybe 9 and 2. But I mean, there's some that are just all African American. Fine. I'm a fan. I watch. I assume they're the best 11 defensive players on that team, and they want to win. Businesses aren't any different than that, and I don't really think cops are much different than that.
Well, I agree with you 100%, and the problem is we have a whole generation of young people who have been indoctrinated by Hollywood, by media, and academia, all telling them the opposite. America got prosperous because it got rich over the backs of black people. It got rich exploiting women. It got rich exploiting Hispanics. And it, by the way, still is institutionally racist. One of those who made the argument about black people being disproportionately kicked out of school as an example of racism, pernicious racism, is Eric Holder, the former AG of the country under Obama. He also made the same argument about the sentencing thing. Never talked about the context, never talked about what the U.S. Sentencing Commission said. So here you have the Attorney General of the United States making these fallacious arguments, giving these examples of pernicious racism when in fact they're not. How is that helping the country? How is that affecting the average young black person? Nobody wants to do his homework anyway. And now Eric Holder just giving you a reason that if I bust my butt and I do this homework and I spend 2 hours doing stuff I don't want to do instead of going out and playing the way my friends are, I'm not going to be rewarded for this. What's the point?
It does so much harm. I mean, look at it. Forget about macro. Let's just go micro. Let's just suppose you had a child and that child had a handicap. And let's just say Brad Williams, very funny stand-up comedian, is a little person. And his dad beat it into him, this is not going to slow you down. This is not going to hold you back. Yes, you're different. Yes, you have – this is the hand you got dealt. But you're going to go out and outwork everyone and you're going to prove to everyone. And he's very successful. And by the way, great guy. Very, guys, head on straight. But the worst thing you could do if you had a child that was in a wheelchair is convince them that they're going to have a life with no ramps and discrimination and bosses not hiring and women not loving them and teachers discriminating. Like, you would then take a kid who was in this wheelchair and you would essentially destroy their life. And we can all agree that would be the worst parenting ever. Right. Well, now you have an able-bodied kid and we're convincing them they're handicapped. This is the worst piece of parenting ever. It would never fly from a micro standpoint. We're doing this in a macro way now by trying to convince just generations of young black men that they're handicapped and they live in a society with no ramps and no lifts and who won't hire the handicapped. And it's insane. And by the way, the results we're seeing are from 50 years of this. I'm convinced.
When I was a kid, my mother sat me on the steps. We had a little illustrated book of all the presidents from George Washington to the then incumbent Dwight Eisenhower. We go over all of them. I had to be 7 years old, and she closed the book. She looked at me, and she said, Larry, if you want to be in this book someday, there's nothing that can stop you from being in it. I never aspired to being a politician, but it never occurred to me that my mother was saying anything other than what she truly believed, and therefore I believed it. Fast forward, Obama gets elected. I'm old school. I have the LA Times, New York Times thrown at my house. I pick up the newspapers. Both of them had a bunch of color pictures of black parents holding their kids crying, saying things like, now for the first time when I tell my daughter she can grow up to be anything she can be, I can now say it with sincerity. Now I can tell my daughter she can do anything she wants, and now I can believe it, and she'll believe it. And I said to myself, suppose Obama had lost. What would you have said to the kids then? What have you been saying to them now? You've been telling them they can be anything they can be, and you haven't believed it, so therefore, do you think they believed it? I mean, honestly, you needed Obama to become president of the United States before you believe that you can do something. Debbie Thompson was the first black skater in the Olympics who won a medal. And she kept being asked, who inspired you? Who motivated you? Who encouraged you to who was your role model? And finally she said, look, I don't need somebody to do something who's black to do something before I believe I can do it. And it's just so condescending. Well, who was Obama's role model before he became president? Hello? Come on.
I absolutely agree. All right, let me hit LifeLock here. Warning, new phishing scam masquerades as a billing error alert from Netflix, pushing victims to update their payment details within 24 hours or the subscription will be voided, and nobody wants that because they're all hooked on Netflix these days. The link even redirects them to a very real-looking CAPTCHA form. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives every day. We put our info at risk on the internet. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number, for sale on the dark web. If you become a victim of identity theft, you have access to dedicated restoration specialists. It's 2020, people. Let's get ourselves some protection. Get LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. LifeLock can see threats you might miss on your own. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LifeLock or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam for 25% off.
My goodness. Yeah. I thought that was a tape. That's not a tape.
No, he's a pro. He does it in real time.
Get out of here.
Do you feel a turning of a corner, a tide changing, an element? It's hard to tell. And so, sorry for asking a question and answering it myself. But you hear these prominent black people, and they're starting to speak up. You hear some of them from the world of athletics. You see some of them are commentators, right. Some more, your Jason Whitlocks and or your Herschel Walkers of the world, Candace Owens, and people like that. I feel like there's a few more folks stepping up and speaking up. Does it feel that way to you?
Absolutely. And the polls are showing this. Rasmussen just had a poll that shows Donald Trump's support for black voters at 44%. That's just stunning. I don't believe it's that high. But let's suppose it's just 20%. That's still three times higher than what he got when he got elected in 2016. If he gets 15-20% of the black vote, the Democratic Party is toast at the presidential level. Yes, something is happening. What's happening is it's hard to beat historically low black unemployment. If it's the economy stupid. And if you look at the exit polls for why blacks and whites voted for Obama, the number one reason was the economy. Under the Trump administration, the black unemployment hit its lowest ever in history. Trump signed the First Step Act that allowed some 5,000 mostly black prisoners to have their sentences reconsidered and reduced an average of something like 70 months. 2,000 black men were released outright out of prison. He pardoned Jack Johnson. It's been a 15-year effort led by people like Ken Burns and Sylvester Stallone, the actor.
Jack Johnson.
What did I say?
No, I'm just telling the audience. They're talking about a long a process trying to get Jack Johnson, famous black heavyweight, dominant heavyweight.
And he was convicted of violating the Mann Act, which was a bogus charge because he had, quote, transported a white woman across state lines for illicit purposes. So they busted him on the Mann Act. And Obama was approached by Ken Burns and Sylvester Stallone. George W. Bush was approached. Trump pardons this guy.
Isn't that a no-brainer?
It seems
for
to me
Obama?
It is. It seems to me it is.
Well,
I mean, come on.
Did you see
The Great White Hope with James Earl Jones? It was what a great movie. This guy was a star, and
he was kind of Muhammad Ali before Muhammad Ali.
Muhammad Ali was blown away. Muhammad Ali said that blank guy is crazy because of all his white girlfriends in 1908 to 1915. Are you kidding me?
So here's another thing, and I'm curious to get your take on this. I turn on CNN. We're coming up on 2021. I hear racist this and racist society and systemic and racism systemic. And I just look around. I go, are they still playing this card? Yeah. They're still playing the card. I know you turned Dave Rubin around famously. But Dave Rubin said to me something that it always stuck. It stuck with me for a long time because he used to work with the Young Turks. He's gay. He's very progressive. Of course, we know where he was. Mm-hmm. He was forged in that fire. And at some point, I said, well, really, what got you to switch? And he said, well, Larry Elder came on the show and we started talking about race and stuff like that. But he really then stopped and he said, you know, when I was with the Young Turks, he said, he thought to himself, how is it that every human who disagrees with us is a racist? How's that mathematically possible? You know what I mean?
Just like the luck of the draw would be one or two of them might not be racist.
Every human who disagrees with you is a racist? And see, to me, they didn't help their cause because Mitt Romney came around and like, all right, that guy's a racist. And like, you can't call everybody who disagrees with you a racist. Eventually, people aren't going to listen. It sort of reminded me, I was down in, you know, it was a record heat in the San Fernando Valley. I was down in Malibu over the weekend, and I was driving down the coastline, and it was packed, wall-to-wall humanity, just umbrellas and towels and everything. And I thought to myself, wait a minute. I thought we're in a lockdown. I thought we'd been talking about coronavirus and stuff like that. And then I thought to myself, you can only tell people the story of doom and gloom for so long before eventually they go, fuck it, I'm going to the beach. And you look and you go, but aren't you worried? It's like, they're not. They've heard so many stories about this that they hit a saturation point and they go, screw it, I think it's safe to go in the ocean.
Right.
And I wonder when the black community is going to do this with racism.
And I wonder when the country is going to do this with respect to Donald Trump. I kind of kept waiting at some point, okay, Trump derangement syndrome is a term that we throw around. But the way they've gone after this man, I've never seen the like of it. And I kind of thought maybe after he'd been president 6 months, 9 months, and the world didn't blow up, and the stock market didn't crash, and we weren't into a depression, and the caravan stopped, I thought at some point people would go, okay, don't like his style, but the country hasn't imploded, and so I guess I'm going to chill. Instead, you cut on CNN, you cut on MSNBC, which I watch a lot because I want to see what the 90% or so that does not get their primary source from Fox News thinks. And the vitriol is as intense, if not more intense, than it was the very day he got elected.
Yeah, it's just a never-ending cavalcade of stories and a new controversy. But my kind of question is much like the beach, which was packed with humanity in the midst of a pandemic, at what point do you overplay your hand?
Yeah.
If I turn on CNN every single morning and there's breaking news, Trump, bombshell, blah, 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 and nothing comes out the other side, at some point, are you going to be the network that cried wolf? Is Wolf going to be the Blitzer going to be the anchor that cried wolf? Like at a certain point, it's sort of like another racist act. You know, Jussie Smollett or Bubba Watson was, or Bubba, did I come up with the right name? Or I think of the
Bubba Watson.
Yeah, I think of the golfer every once in a while. But the news, the stuff, like at some point when you hear another
Bubba Wallace.
Bubba Wallace.
Watson's a golfer.
That's right.
Yeah, thank you.
I knew something was wrong. But the point is at what point do you see that news headline and not pay attention?
Well, Adam, especially since Exhibit A for Donald Trump's alleged racism is him saying there were very fine people on both sides in Charlottesville, which he never said. Even Jake Tapper months ago conceded he never said it. There's another host on The Weekend on CNN named Michael Smirkanish. He even agreed he never said it. Yet I'm watching the RNC, the DNC conventions, and they have guests on CNN, MSNBC, on CNN, and then Joe Biden repeats this lie. And I kept waiting for Anderson Cooper to say, well, excuse me, Jake Tapper of our network just did a thing on this, and it's just not true. Instead, they say nothing. And that's Exhibit A.
He said there were good people on both sides, and then he moments later said, and I'm not talking about.
He was talking about, he's not the most articulate guy in the world. We know that. He's not the most precise speaker. He was talking about the debate over whether or not the monument of Robert E. Lee should be in the public square. That's what he was talking about. There are very fine people on both sides of that debate. That's what he said. That's what he meant. And the only reason that people keep saying the opposite is because it advances their narrative that Donald Trump is a racist. Now, it seems to me if Donald Trump's this big racist, your Exhibit A shouldn't be something that you've made up. It should be pretty easy. Reach into the barrel. Pull out something that he said racist. Reach into the barrel. Pull out something he's done racist. Why can't you do that? Why do you got to make up stuff?
Well, it's interesting if you think about how nefarious it is, which is you make sure the president of the – you're selling this fairy tale of systemic racism. So that's what you're peddling. So if you'd like to say this land is a racist land, you'd go, well, who's king? Oh, the king's a racist. And then you go, oh, okay, so we must have a racist land. It was a tougher sell when President Obama was in there for two terms. But it's a kind of de facto make him racist, and and so goes the country, right? Like, okay, he's racist, and the people that voted him in, thus, you do the math in the racism department. But it's just, first off, it's insidious. It's horrible for black and brown people. But it's also laughable and insulting to me.
And your question, of course, is when are people going to wake up? Look, I went to Crenshaw High School. I picked up the LA Times a couple years ago, front page article. My school, only 3% of kids could do math at grade level. Now, you're living within a geographical radius of Crenshaw High School. You're mandated to go to that school, whether you want to go to it or not. It's also a Crip school. And one party wants to give you the option out, and one party says you're going there whether you want to go there or not. It seems to me I don't have a whole lot of debate about who's on my side. That alone, as I said before, should cause black people to rethink their allegiance to the Democratic Party. Then you look at illegal immigration. There's a Harvard professor named George Borjas who's probably done more work on the impact of legal and illegal immigration than any other economist. He says there are winners and losers because of illegal immigration. Obviously, the winners are the illegals themselves, people who hire them at cheaper wages than they would otherwise or hire other people. They're winners. The big losers are unskilled black and brown workers who have to compete for jobs they would otherwise hold and whose wages have downward pressure put on them because of the availability of somebody willing to do it for less money. Aren't those good enough issues for you to say, maybe we ought not be 95% in the party of porous borders? Maybe we ought not be 95% in the party that's anti-choice? That alone, it seems to me, Adam, should make black people rethink their allegiance. Republican Party is not making an effective argument.
I agree. All right. Interesting note to go out on. Real quick, 15 seconds. I'll tell you about Simply Safe. Two eyes in there. You shouldn't feel unsafe at home, period. And that's where Simply Safe comes in. Free shipping, by the way. Go to simplysafe.com/Adam. I am going to be at the Tempe, Arizona Improv Saturday and Sunday. Sorry, Friday and Saturday, coming up September 18th and 19th. I'll be doing live stand-up and podcast there. I was... many months ago when we lived in a free society, I was on stage at the Improv, and I looked to my left, and there was Larry Elder just enjoying a glass of wine.
See my Uncle Tom t-shirt?
And sitting there,
yes,
and
sir.
I thought, oh, joy, Larry Elder
is here.
Did you
guys see this? All
right. Yes. Uncle Tom, by the way, is the documentary. It's fantastic. Show it to your kids. Share it with someone you work with. And again, 9.4 on IMDb.
Share it with a liberal.
Available on DVD, or you can stream it at UncleTom.com. And you can go to AdamCarolla.com for all the live shows, because I'll be traveling around doing my thing. And my book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, is available now. Write a review on Amazon. I shall read it. Until next time, it's Adam Carolla for Gina Grad and Bald Brian and Jeff Cesario and Larry Elder saying mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744 and pick up Adam's new book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. Get it now at adamcarolla.com. And thanks to Bet Online.